What's up, folks? How you doing? Welcome back to another episode of this friggin' podcast. My name is Lee Frazier. I'm one of the hosts.
I'm Jonathan Canary.
Well, there we go. So Jonathan stayed up all last night drinking Red Bull.
I did.
Yeah, and he's, what would you say? You were listening to light?
All I could hear was the darkness. We drank a lot of Red Bull this weekend.
We're here on Sunday, about to leave Halifax, just doing a little podcast recording this morning with fellow Cape Bretoner, Alex McLean. We've known each other for a few years, and then we did Seawall the other year, and he started a podcast the end of last year, I believe. And so we wanted to link up with him, talk about that, and he done a couple of fun things that I wanted to pick his brain on about little backyard adventures.
Alex is a fucking beauty.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
But before we... What? You're going to say something?
No, we have a misadventure.
Yeah, that's what I was going. Yeah. Okay, so this one's from Mike Morrison. All it says is bear story. So I'm pretty curious to see what this one is all about.
Hi, this is Mike Morrison. I'm from Sydney Forks. This is a story that took place in Potts Cove. A few years ago, my wife and myself and our two teenage daughters were hiking out of Pollitt's Cove after spending the night there. I think the girls were probably 16 and 17 at the time. Anyway, they were hiking up ahead of Jody and I, and we were a bit tired, so everybody was being pretty quiet, just hiking out to the car. We were probably about 3 kilometers from the end of the trail. We came around a turn, and the girls were stopped dead in their tracks, and they looked back at us, and one of them said, "Bear, bear, bear." So we kind of stopped and took a few steps back, waited a few minutes, and then went on our way, hoping the bear would have heard us and taken off. But we came around the turn, and the bear was sitting there basically in the middle of the trail, just kind of staring at us, not looking too eager to go anywhere. So we made some noise, started singing songs, kind of backed off again and tried again in a couple minutes, and we got around the turn, and she's still sitting there staring at us. I kind of started banging my trekking poles together and, you know, talking to her and hoping she was just going to turn and go. But instead, she actually bluff charged us a couple times, which really kind of got the heart moving. It was nothing too dramatic. She probably moved her own body length a little more and made kind of a harumph sound as she did so. So anyway, backed off again. I thought I could hear some branches breaking and stuff off to the side of the trail, so I'm assuming maybe she had some cubs with her. Anyway, we did that a couple times, and eventually I could hear her moving off to the side of the trail, so we walked down. She walked parallel to the trail, not too far from us. We got a great look at her, big, beautiful bear. As we walked past, you know, maybe 50 meters or so, I kind of stopped and turned back and looked, and there she was sitting on the trail. Basically where we had been waiting her out, just watching us go. It was a bit unnerving, but a pretty cool thing to have happened. Thanks.
They call that the Bay St. Lawrence standoff. I love that. We have Mike coming up on a future episode of the podcast.
Yeah, to talk about another misadventure story. Pretty fun one.
Yeah,
this past summer.
Yeah, we're gonna save that one.
Yeah. But yeah. So these, if you're just listening to this podcast, we're looking for submissions for adventure stories, misadventure, fun stuff, scary stuff, anything really that, you know, it could just be whatever, a fun trip that you did. Just looking to get a, just like this one was, minute, 2 minute audio clip. You can do a voice memo on your phone, email it to info@liveLifeIntense.com, or just send a DM on social channels, and we'll get it and feature it in an upcoming episode of this podcast.
I think the moral of this is maybe, you know, make a lot of noise, but don't expect that to work all the time. Maybe sometimes you just gotta be patient.
I got charged by a moose in Otter Brook, mm-hmm. when I was a kid hiking in, and we jumped right over. I just remember hearing grunts and then crashing, and it was like shit, and just ran towards the coast and jumped over the bank and slid down the bank down to the ocean, and then had to make my way back to Otter Brook.
Did I tell you I don't run into bears that often, but the last time I ran into a bear, did I ever tell you that? It was on Skyline Trail.
Nope.
So we were shooting a project that we were sent on, three of us, rookies. We were sent on a project to basically a scavenger hunt, to interview, tourists during COVID. And we had to find all of these different demographics, you know, like a mother and child and different ages and things like that.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to give them a line to say. We didn't want to say, you know, Cape Breton Island is a magical whatever. But we had to talk to them a little bit and try to get them to say something, and then we would help them narrow that down and get them to deliver that line. So it was a little authentic. So it was authentic, right? Anyway, so we had gotten everyone ticked off in 2 days. This is a near impossible feat. Okay. This is like that we were set up to fail on this. Okay. This is a near impossible feat, and we were getting around the trail, and the last thing we need to do is the Skyline Trail. Because if we don't have the Skyline Trail in this promotional campaign, it's like, that's like the thing that people want to come and see, right? Tourists, that's the thing they market to tourists. So we get there, and there was like some confusion about us being a film crew and blah, 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 blah. And we had a, you know, so it took a little while to get clearance from parks to like go up there and do an interview. And anyways, we just had like such a long 2 days, and we had taken some time and gone to Shetty Camp, and we ate Wabo's pizza. Wabo's?
Yeah.
Ate Wabo's pizza. And it was really the only thing we ate all day. And we drove back up to the Skyline, and we had clearance to go up there and shoot. We go up there and shoot. And as we're leaving the truck with all the film gear, I was like, man, my stomach doesn't feel right. But, and one of the other crew members was like, oh, like, you know, do you want to like, you want to take a minute? I'm like, no, 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 no. Let's just get to the look off. Interview this really handsome couple that just went up the trail 10 minutes when we were in the parking lot. Let's get them, and then we can get out of here. And then this project is complete, this impossible project. So we get up there, we see this really handsome couple, and we interview them. And the guy has this really deep voice, and it's really, really great. And he delivers this magical line, and we're like, sick, this is awesome. And we're just packing up, and I'm like, oh my God, I am going to shit my pants. So we start running down the trail, and like, I am like power walking with my butt cheeks clenched, and they're like behind me, and I'm just like, guys, don't even worry about me. Don't worry about keeping up with me. I'm gone. So I get almost to the down the bottom, and you get to that like moose enclosure that's within the first 2K, and there are these two older ladies standing there, and they have, you know, a daughter who's maybe in their teens, and they are vibrating, and I'm like, what's going on, guys? They're like, bear. And I look inside the moose enclosure, and there is a bear sitting there eating blueberries. And that was the moment that I realized that I am more terrified of shitting my pants in public than I am of a live bear. And I just said, yeah, that's just too bad. And I opened up the door, and I power walked past the bear, and the bear didn't even budge. And you know, if the bear decided it was going to eat me, it would have been the worst mistake of that bear's life, because I would have shit all over it. Anyway, you know, I didn't shit my pants. I got to the bottom, and we got to the bathroom. But, you know, moral of that story is, if you think you're going to shit, you should probably just shit, you know?
Well, and now we have...
So we have Alex McClay this week.
Yeah, not, yeah.
No, let's jump right into that.
Okay. Fuck. See you next week.
was so quiet. I was saying to Alex last night, we drank so many Red Bull out last night that when I went to go to sleep, I could hear the darkness.
Oh my God. You know,
like, I was sitting there like, whoa. I think I can hear like my body pumping blood through my brain right now.
Oh my God. It's been a very long time since I drank a Red Bull. Oh.
The last time I drank a Red Bull was when I like first got sober. I was like maybe 6 months sober and we hiked Ferry Hole and I was like really tired and I was like, oh, I'll just get a Red Bull on the way up. And I, as soon as I took a few drinks of it, I started hyperventilating. And I mean, I sprinted up the mountain. We went swimming. I swam six people from shore to the actual cave because we got there and they were all like, oh no, we can't swim. All these girls, right? And so I swam them and their kids over to the cave. And then we got back. And I sprinted back to the truck and I was still taking a panic attack. I had not all day out in the woods and I couldn't work it off.
Did you ever bring one in your pack after that experience?
No.
Knowing that you can... No.
No.
You don't want to bring one on the seawall for the last
day?
No,
I do not want to feel like that ever. But last night was the first time we like really dove into some Red Bulls.
Oh my God.
Ugh. I feel like a dirty, dirty boy today. Like I feel like I did something bad last night.
Oh man. Well, thanks for jumping in, Alex.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, who do we have here with us, Lee?
Alex McLean.
Yeah.
Not East Coast Lifestyle Alex McLean.
Good clarification, because there's been several people who've made... I had a prof in university at CBU, and Alex McLean of East Coast Lifestyle was putting a talk on somewhere in Sydney. My prof like pulled me aside at the end of class. He's like, are you giving a talk? I was like, no, if that was me, I wouldn't be here right now. But on the flip side, it's worked on the other in a good way, because
you always get grants for things now.
That's exactly it. I wrote, I cold called a company. I was like, here's my proposal. Would you like to sponsor us in terms of in exchange for like exposure or whatever? And the guy was stoked. He was like, yeah, like I went snowboarding with you out west and that was such a great time. We'd love to pair. And I was like, well, clarification. I have like 200 followers on Instagram, not 200,000.
Anyway, you're cooler.
Well,
I think
you.
You're cooler. So, Alex, why don't you tell the listeners about yourself?
So, yeah, my name's Alex McLean. How far back do you want me to start?
You just,
yeah. do you, man. Just rip and roll, rock and roll.
I'm from Cape Breton originally. I grew up on Alma Dam, so on the east coast of Cape Breton, kind of the other side that leads on. I grew up on a farm. I have three younger brothers who are all taller than I am, which is a fun fact that I like to tell everyone. I'm 6'1". So my 16-year-old brother is like 6'5". Farm, I'm a mechanical engineer. So I did that for school and now I'm working in the HVAC industry and energy modeling. And I like to get outside and do fun stuff.
Sick.
Yeah, real fun stuff.
You have a podcast.
Oh yeah, we did say. I have a podcast called The 41st Hour. So it's on break right now. I was gonna take December off intentionally, and then I got a concussion in November, and then so I just took an extended break, and it's actually been kind of nice to kind of remove myself from it and start from ground one and come back and reassess things. But yeah, the podcast looks into like work-life balance and people's outdoor hobbies primarily. And so kind of like what different combinations between careers and activities there are, and how do people manage their time in order to incorporate both of them? So whether you're like a runner or a climber and you work 9 to 5 or shift work, yeah, how are you kind of making that all work and fitting into your day?
Mm-hmm. You kind of went right into it. You just like release an episode out like bang, 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 bang.
Oh, yeah. Which was the reason I needed a break for December. I was doing weekly and I was like, this is crazy. So the balance was climbing, running, podcast. Those were my three activities. And obviously like work and laundry and groceries and whatever. But I was like, oh, I can't do this. I'm going to let one drop. And I was like, okay, the next year is going to be climbing podcast focus. And I went for a run. I had so much fun. I was like, I can't give up running. I can't do it. So the plan is, like, when I do get it back, I think bi-weekly will be attainable. And then if that's not working, then maybe monthly or just honestly even random episodes. I might just talk to people when I want to talk to them and drop one here, drop two there.
Yeah. That's a fun way of doing things. I mean, we kind of just structure them in for this one and just like the winter months because it's slower and summer is not realistic and setting them up and doing them. But yeah, I mean, you can put things in place that streamline the whole process, right? Of course, there's no streamlining the actual recording process, but all the posts.
Talk faster if you want.
it's like listening to a podcast at like 1.5x or 2x. I know people that do that. It's like, why?
No, you wouldn't be able to follow.
But it's like all the post stuff, right? So we finished recording this. Like, it might take me like, depending if we have to edit stuff in, but maybe an hour a total, and then it's uploaded and ready to go.
Yeah, and I usually spend an hour on it.
Yeah, so it's, you know, a couple hours here and there, but like you can get, we were discussing this because Dave Green is releasing a podcast on, what's today, Sunday? He's releasing one
tomorrow. I ran into him at the All Out Trail run yesterday. Yeah, he's dropping 3 episodes tomorrow. Just to build like some momentum for the...
So they're like, I was talking to him about, and so was Canary, about streamlining the whole thing. It's a lot of like, the startup takes a little while and getting your workflow, but once you get that, then it's just like anything, right? It's like, how do you you know, get more efficient at running and managing your time, exactly what your podcast is about. And it just all, you work it out.
He has messaged me, super randomly. Like, we talked about it and I said, yeah, man, like, if you have any questions about any of the editing suites you're using, just contact me in Lee, you know? And he had messaged us both a few times, I think. And finally he had some final questions for like mastering. And I just said, hey, like, and when you're done, like, send over one of your episodes or whatever, and I'll have a look at it. And if there's anything I can think of, like, it's always good to have a second set of ears on it, right? And he sent it over. I'm like, man, this is great. Like, are you sure you've never edited anything before? He's like, no. I was like, man, this is awesome. So
what's he using? And what are you guys using?
Logic.
Okay.
Yeah, for the most part. It's just, it comes off this little Zoom recorder here, which is specifically made for podcasts. It's great. And then we just bounce the tracks out, throw it in the laptop, whack it in settings, and I have a preset project template. I just throw it in Logic, and then I have like channel strip mastering settings, and I just kind of, I have them saved. So it has all the processing, and you just kind of play with like input volume and output volume pretty much and play around some stuff, but it's more or less set based on his voice. And then one's based on my voice, like the EQ, and then a quick one on the guest, and then a master, and then bounce. And then I bounce it out, and well, and Marguerite takes about an hour to upload 20 meg file. But
and like, if we have anything like we've done a few special episodes or like small things, like we did one a couple of weeks ago was a soundscape. So I took about 6 hours of recording at the Seawall Trail Film Festival.
Oh, I listened to that one, I think.
Yeah, and just with like some condenser mics and room mics and a shotgun, and went through those 3 mics, 6 hours each mic, basically, and weeded out everything that
so
I thought was...
listened to the whole 6 hours.
Yeah. But we tried to weed out everything that I thought would bring the listener there.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be practical to do that all the time.
For these ones? You don't re-listen?
Well, it's just like, it wouldn't be practical to spend 6 hours on just picking apart content.
Yeah.
You know? But it is super nice to do those little things once in a while, you know? Yeah, and there's no really streamlining that either.
Yeah. So, and you stopped doing them in what, November? How many did you do?
I did 18. I wanted to do 20, so I had guest lineup for 19, 20.
Yeah.
And then I got the concussion. I was just like, I was taking December off anyways, and it was just like mid-November, so I was like, I'll just take an extra 2 weeks off. And then, I don't really have a return date, but if we do one after this, then I'll just throw yours out there and
Get back to it. Where'd you get the concussion from?
Basketball. Super lame.
I was expecting something like
a
rock
that.
Face and fell off that, but
no, it wasn't even an elbow. It was just the ball.
Shit. Well, I mean, that's the way she goes sometimes.
Yeah, they're weird.
So you're into one of the things I want to talk about in this is like your backyard adventures, because I absolutely like the create. It's kind of like what I was saying. You reminded me of stuff from like what's his name,
Bo Miles
from Australia, that kind of thing. So you did like a Tim Hortons run. And then like a backyard ultra. The backyard ultra, though, I like your post about it. Like it was like the running commentary to go along with the carousel. It was awesome.
So yeah, we'll start with the Timbit run. That was just kind of came up out of the blue. So I went surfing with my climbing partner and good friend Rill in November. So it was pretty cold, and we got out, and I was like, I want like something warm and a donut. So like, where's the nearest Tim's? And then this is how all my ideas go. It starts with like something small. And I'm like, oh, what if you just like added this on? And then what if you added this on? And then you end up running to each Tim Hortons in Halifax. So it was, oh, how many Tim Hortons are there? Could you drive to them all? Could you run to them all? And then there has to be like a goal for each one, because you don't want to just run them there and not do anything. So it's to get a Timbit at each one. And the real fun part about this was that it wasn't like a set race. Or it wasn't even a race, but like there was no set route. Like I had to go and find the addresses and then map it out to the shortest distance that I could figure out. So there's like a puzzle. And even afterwards, I kind of like put this out on the internet hoping other people would do it, but I didn't give them like my Strava route. Like I want them to go through the same process and kind of figure out the logistics of the plan.
Yeah.
But I think there's 25 Tim Hortons. There's 6 in Dartmouth. And to kind of make it a loop, we took the ferry over one way, ran to all of them, took the bridge back, connected. And I think it was like 30 kilometers or something. And Emily McKay did it with me.
Love Emily.
Yeah, yeah. She's
we had her
stoked.
On the pod.
Yeah, she's awesome. But yeah, I think I'll do it again this year. So if anybody wants to do it with me, any pace.
How long was it?
Like distance-wise or time-wise?
Both.
Exactly. I think it was like 31 point something, and then it was under 4 hours. It was like, so it wasn't super fast. And you get tons of breaks. You get to eat a bunch of Timbits.
What's the average distance between Tim Hortons?
Sometimes it's like 500 meters and sometimes it's 2 kilometers. So you're never running like an extremely long distance at one time, which is why I think it's pretty friendly to most people.
I think I could do that.
Well, you're committed now.
All right.
Be careful what you say.
All right. I will tentatively commit to that.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
You guys should do one in Sydney. Didn't Johnny Myatt do one in Sydney?
Oh, maybe. Who knows?
I think he did. I saw something on Strava. Yeah. But the Tims were a lot further spaced apart.
And then where do you go? Do you just stick
26 kilometers?
Do you stick to Sydney or you to go to like in Bredor, all the way to Bredor? You know, a big Tim Horton ultra run.
Yeah.
Right? North Sydney. Bredor.
Bedeck.
Fuck. Why not? Let's just go. Oh, there's none in Shady Camp anymore. No, Wycoggan. Well, let's get to Wycoggan. Let's just do Peroxbury to Sydney.
Yeah.
And down the other side. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the Tim Hortons run. And then the Backyard Ultra kind of happened by accident, honestly. Because
that's what I like about it. That's what I liked about the post, because I was like, I just started reading it. And I meant to read it again before you came here, and then I totally forgot about it until now. But yeah, just yeah, keep going.
So again, Emily was involved, and so was Alec LaFleur, who you guys know as well. But one of them had proposed running Cape Chignecto. I think it might have been Alec. And that had been on my radar for a little bit because I had other friends who had done it. I was like, oh, that seems kind of interesting, whatever. So I committed. I was like, oh, I'll do it with you guys. And we had aimed for May long weekend, but then Alec is in the army and something shifted. He couldn't do it. And I would say I was training for it, but it was very like loose term training, just kind of going for some long runs, no structured plan. And I kind of told some people I was going to run Chignecto. So I was like, oh, now I can't not do something. So I'd been clearing a trail on the family farm, it was already a trail, just kind of got overgrown. I think it follows the fence line at some points.
Yeah.
And I mapped it out And I thought it was 5 kilometers. So it's like, oh, sweet. I'll just do like 10 laps of that. I'll hit my 50K and I can call it a day. So it actually turned out to be 5 3/4, which I didn't realize until afterwards. But I hit 9 kilometers or 9 laps and I hit my 50K mark. And I was like, oh, cool. But like I said, I'd do 10 laps. So I did another one. And then I was like, oh, one more lap, I can hit 60. Like, why wouldn't I do 60? And then that slowly progressed. And I was like, oh, I'm only like, I don't know what the math is, 3 or 4 laps from a 50 miler, which is 80 kilometers. I was like, oh, like my legs feel all right. Like I can do it. So I did that. And then I was like, well, if everyone want to run 100 kilometers someday, I'm going to have to run all 80 kilometers over again. So I may as well just run another 20 and get it over with. And I thought I had 3 more laps and I did my, well, I thought it was the last lap and it was like 98.7. I was like, oh my God, I had to go for a final one. But it was a really cool, like I didn't come up with the idea. A backyard ultra isn't necessarily in your backyard.
Yeah.
It's just a loop. And so there's one in Kedgy that I think Trail Running Nova Scotia puts on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you just run the loop every hour. And so I've never run a proper ultra that's like a big loop, but in my experience, it's a pretty safe way to try and like push your limits and get out there because you're running a loop. So you're never too far from anywheres, be it like aid station or like first responders or whatever. You get a break after every hour if you finish like within the hour. So mm-hmm. My first lap I ran in 35 minutes or so, and the last one was 53. But there was a set there where I was consistently hitting 45 minutes. That was interesting for a couple of reasons, but it really gave you like a new perspective on how long 15 minutes is, because you had to like get in, get all your stuff done, and then go back out, right?
Yeah.
So I get in, I would lay down for 5 minutes, close my eyes. I would get up, eat as many mashed potatoes as I could in 5 minutes, and then get ready and stretch for 5 minutes and then go back out. And actually yesterday, All Out Trail Racing hosted a similar event out in McDonald's Sports Park. So they had a 6K loop and they had two events. They had a 10K run and then an 8-hour endurance. So the 10K was fastest people finish and the 8-hour loop was kind of the backyard form.
Yeah.
But if people tied on the number of loops they did on the backyard, then it was the fastest 10K that won, which is really interesting because you got to figure out if you want to do like come out guns blazing, finish with a fast 10K time, but then maybe burn out in the ultra laps. Or be conservative. So anyways, I went to go check out the Saturday and stay for the full 8 hours.
So how long did it take you to do the 100K?
18 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is nuts.
It was an event. So there was actually a family gathering too. So like my cousins were there and there's a bunch of family and like I would get back and I'd be laying down. And there'd be kids running all over the place. And then they were all gone for like a family supper and I was still on like my 16th lap. I was just like, man, why am I doing this?
What was the recovery like? Blah, blah, blah. I can't even talk. Wow. Anyways, you got my point.
Better than expected. Like I was definitely hobbling, but moving the next day. I also ran with poles though, so I think that helped.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, it didn't make it worse.
Just to take a bit of your upper body weight?
Take a bit of weight off the legs, and then also I just use my arms a bit, right? Because when you're running, they're kind of like propelling you, but not as much as when you're using poles.
True.
Also, it definitely helped with the hills because you can kind of like power hike with the poles. Mm-hmm. But then it's so like muscular recovery wasn't bad, like a couple weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. But still kind of assessing something in my knee/shin, which I don't know what it is yet. But trying to figure that out before I go.
Still bothering you.
Still, yeah, bothering. It's like not necessarily painful, but there's something going on. So I want to get that sorted out.
It's been on my list. I want to run endurance.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any goals or what's on your list?
I started doing this vlog and about a couple weeks ago I sat down and I was coming up with ideas for just for, you know, if I don't have something that week, I can like go back to this list and go like, oh, okay, I want to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So it'd be anything from like scouting or getting back to this area behind my place, up the place called Mill Valley. I want to go and see if it's suitable for skiing, like a little bit downhill routes and stuff. Yeah. It's like a wilderness area. And like protected area, but I've been up there on the tops. maple trees, like you can't even, like old growth maple trees, like monstrosities up okay. there, like huge. So we hiked from my place to Whale Cove Beach one time. It's like 14K and it's huge old growth. Anyways, I wanted to get up. That's one of them. But the other one was I need to just get the actual distance for canoeing in the Southwest River and that kind of rough idea of time. Distance and that sort of stuff from Lake Ainslie down. There's different sections of the river just for canoe rentals, right?
Okay.
And when people ask, I can just say, hey, here's the time. Here's kind of like a GPS file of where you're going. If you want to camp, like these are some spots on the river you can camp that aren't on like somebody's private property yeah. or whatever, right? So that sort of stuff. But the idea was like, okay, well, maybe what I'll do is I'll drive to Lake Ainslie where the Southwest River, the head of the Southwest River, put in there, leave the truck, paddle all the way to the harbor and then get out and then run back to the truck.
Do it.
Yeah. So I think it's like 30-ish. It's almost a marathon.
Okay.
To get back there.
So when you get back to your truck, you're going to be like, ah, 10 more and it's a marathon. Keep going.
Probably.
Yeah.
But then I, you know, then I messaged Chalmers, who's going to come on this podcast, but Chalmers Blinkhorn moved to Inganish and does a bunch of ultra running stuff. And so I was out with him the other day and I go, listen, I'm just going to run it. I've never run a marathon and it's on my list and I'm just going to run a marathon. So the longest I've ever ran has been like 22K. And that was I ran Smoky in the Cabot Trail Relay with no training. I just ran, I died. I was the last place that year, but I finished. But yeah, it was, it's on a list like to do all that shit. Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And it helps out so much cause it gives you kind of like, kind of like a goal to stay in a certain, fitness, you know, just mm-hmm. a level of fitness. And it helps out for me too, with guiding and all that sort of stuff. Like last year we did the Highlands trip the previous year. I came off like not doing much fitness at all. So last year in November, I said, listen, for the Highlands trip this year, I'm going to be able to go forever. Like, and I'm training. So I started training weight vests, like running with vests, and then coming back and doing a bunch of like box jumps with 30 pounds on and like pull ups and all this sort of stuff for my legs, knees, and just getting them accustomed to being on, with a heavy backpack on. And when it came to the trip, it was just like, I was going up Franny. I was not even sweating. I was just like, man, I could do this all day. It was crazy, the difference. And then this summer with doing seawall, like I did seawall four times in like a month. And like, I was just, I wouldn't even break like my heart, which is not the heart rate on my Garmin. It was just like warm up mode the whole time going up those mountains.
So I have a question. What is your typical, like, what is your training or preparedness for doing like runs like these?
So for those two is kind of like, there's no structure. I was just getting out going for as long as I would do is kind of a half marathon. I wasn't worried about pace. I was just kind of getting the kilometers in.
Yeah.
But also like for the 100K, my plan was to get like half marathon in. That would be close enough to half for Chignecto that I could do Chignecto, like just tough it out. So wasn't much training. I think I should have gone with a more structured approach, which is what I'm realizing now. I probably wouldn't be dealing with like the shin/knee issue. But relating to the concussion, like I wouldn't recommend getting concussion, obviously, but it's been a it's been a nice reset. So I can kind of go back to square one and start with a clean slate. And so now it's just kind of slowly building that base, like increasing by 10% mileage each week kind of thing. Okay. And before, like after having run like the Timbit run for 30 kilometers, I wouldn't typically go out for a run unless it was at least 10K, like 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, because starting with like 6 to 8 weeks of not doing anything, I'm almost like giving myself permission to go for these shorter runs. Whereas before I wouldn't leave the house to go for a 5K or like a 3K. But now because I don't have like that base fitness, mm-hmm. Like I'll just go out and do it. And, but yeah, training, right now it's just building that base, but eventually I do want to get back to something more structured, like 100K, in which case I would definitely recommend like getting a structured plan and maybe even a coach or something I've been looking into, but I don't know if a coach is worth, I don't know if they're worth it or not worth it. I don't want to speak either way.
I was, and we'll probably do this when we talk to Chalmers. We went on a hike up the Clyburn, trying to get up to this place called Indian Rising, but a river was too high. So we just went up the Clyburn to this big waterfalls up there. And I was asking him about, because he's starting a guiding company up in Inganish, and it was kind of like a amalgamation of a few things like hiking, but it was, he ran a running coaching kind of thing, not advertised, just through word of mouth for some people, some clients. And I was asking him about, you know, what goes into that process. And it was pretty interesting because he uses a certain app. I forget what the name it is, and you register for it. And he was telling me that he doesn't have it boiled down to a science, but he can tell you, like, he's coaching you, and he gets you to do a baseline, and then they build you up from there. But based off of your heart rate, and how much you're getting strained, he can tell if you're going to get sick soon. So he'll like tell his clients, he's like, oh, well, your heart rate's getting a little bit high for that area, like that run. I think you're going to be sick soon. So take some time off, eat some echinacea, that sort of stuff. And then we'll revisit this in like five, 6 days or whatever. Right. But it was pretty interesting to see like what goes on behind him. He was breaking it all down for me. I'm like, oh shit. I thought like you just like, he just sets a bunch of runs for you, but no, he goes into like, you know, footwear, what stuff you're going to use, like all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's more stuff into it. I'm like, oh shit. Okay, cool.
Part of what I think a coach would be good for too is, personally, I don't want to like specify in any one activity. Like, I want to keep climbing. I want to run. I want to start looking into bikepacking and stuff. So I think a coach for me would be valuable in trying to incorporate different aspects of fitness into the running training.
Yeah.
So for example, I haven't done it yet, but it's on my radar to bike out to the Bluff, run the Bluff and bike home. But how does biking 16 kilometers there and 16 kilometers back impact the amount of running you should do during that fitness activity? Which I don't know. I don't have a background in fitness. I have no idea.
Yeah, the multi-sport thing is something I'm into right now.
Like, too. I don't know if I even would have thought of that. So I think you're doing all right.
Yeah. So what's this? You were messaging me too about using the Packrafts and stuff. There was like a trip that you were thinking about doing that might be applicable to using those.
Yeah. So this past summer, just kind of segue into how it came up. Rill and I, again, my climbing partner,
yeah.
There's a list of obscure climbs in the guidebook. It's called Matt's Fat Cracks. So like, it tells you all you need to know about it. But it's trad climbing. So climbing, there's two different types. There's two main types of rope climbing. I might get a bit of shit for this, but there's sport climbing and trad climbing. And sport climbing is when there's bolts in the rock. So you climb up, you clip a bolt, clip your rope into that, and then you keep going to the next bolt and so on. So, and then trad climbing, you're typically climbing cracks or rock that has holes, cracks in it. And then you insert these pieces of gear into the cracks and then you clip into those. So you kind of choose where your protection is and how far spaced out it is.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt's Fat Cracks is a list of six crack climbs. And last summer, not 22, but 2021, I want to try and do them all in the summer, just try and get them done, see if it's possible. And again, back to the idea where my idea start with something like that and then slowly build, I was like, oh, first of all, I didn't do them all in the summer. There's one missing. But then I was like, I wonder if you could do them all in a day. And then I was thinking about logistics, and you have to drive, but how do you factor out the driving if you're going to time it? Because you could just do like 140 down the highway. So then I was like, oh, well, if you bike to each one, then it's all like however much effort you put into it. So that's how this came about. And we decided to try and bike to each of these climbs and do them.
Mm-hmm.
And we managed to do it. We're talking at the next night of adventure about it. So I don't know when this is coming out, but
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay. Yeah. Well, it'll have already happened. So hopefully I see you guys there. And so the next idea was, again, like kind of seeing like what's available within Halifax region or Nova Scotia, and like, how can we make the most of it and go on these kind of backyard adventures? And Muscadaba has a lot of climbing areas, mm-hmm. and a lot of trails. And so there's the idea of, if you ran to a bunch of different climbs, could you do them? But we want to make sure they're easy enough to do if we were kind of exhausted from running. And also just kind of like the distribution curve, there's less easy climbs and less really hard climbs. So if you chose like a mediocre climb and we wanted to do all of them, you'd have like 87 climbs to do or whatever. So we chose like the easiest climbs. So the plan is to try and climb all the 5-6 climbs in Muscadabit. And just taking a look, you could start up in Gibraltar and then kind of pack raft down the Muscadabit River, I think it is, and then go to this other crag, and then pick up pack rafts and like walk to this other cliff and climb the ones there, and then get back in the pack rafts and link it all together. So that's what I want to do. We were going to try and do it in the fall, but things got busy and whatnot.
Oh, man,
so.
You got to talk to Denis. Denis, he'll sponsor that probably with his new pack raft company. He did it. He sponsored, with his, I think, his first two models that he got done. And I think there were two women out in BC were doing like a bike rafting trip, big bike rafting trip. And they were kind of his like product testers for the most part for his first couple models. And so, yeah, they just packed down their bikes and strapped them to the front of the pack raft and then pack raft wherever lakes and then got to the lake and put the bike together and packed everything down and then biked to the next location and then, you know, this whole trip. And I see it happen all the time. So, but yeah, like the lightweight ones, man.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely could be, get that done easy.
I think so. It's on the list. I got to start writing all my things down. I have them somewhere, but I don't know. I lost my list somewhere.
Oh, you should see my notes in this phone. And then I have like sheets and sheets and sheets on like white notepads plus like logbooks of everything.
Was the last time you guys were together Seawall?
Probably.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was over a year ago now.
Man, that was 2 years. Three, two?
It would have been...
2021?
2021, yeah.
2021, yeah.
In the fall.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah. My legs were dead. Talking about, we were at our interview with Noah Booth and talking about film gear and like the weight of things.
It's so impressive what you guys do.
I was like, what the? I pack way too much in that one. And it was like that camera and the lens and the batteries and the drone, and I carried most of everything. And then going up those mountains, you were like a billy goat going up those mountains. Man, it was just like boom, 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 boom. I'm like, oh my God, I got to carry this backpack. Oh, it was heavy.
I think. For me, I didn't. So usually I'm hiking with climbing gear, right? Like a rope and a bunch of stuff. And obviously I didn't bring that on the seawall. So I was carrying a lighter than normal pack for
me. That was like me this summer in seawall. I was like not carrying any camera gear. And I was just up and down and sideways and like running up the mountains. I'm like, oh my God, this is what actually, like, this is what it feels like to have like a normal weighted backpack. My straps on the bag I had in that were all, because of all the weight I used to carry in those packs, like literally the shoulder straps are like bursting out, like all the padding's all ripping off them. I duct tape on them, and then I end up, Alex, like, you're trying to run a guiding company, you should probably invest in a little bit better bag so it's not falling apart. I go, yeah, fair game. But I had that bag since I was like 13 years old, right? I've been using it for everything. But yeah, the upgrade I got this year was great. He found some new stuff. But yeah, the Seawall, man, that was a fun trip. So the route that we took, the route that we actually guide is a little bit different.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So it goes more inland. It circumnavigates Paulet's Cove.
Yeah.
And I go in from Paulet's Cove and I go south to north. I tend to like that route much better. And then I have a couple notes in one of my notepads, with like, excuse me, changes to that route too, that make it a little bit more streamlined. And you know, when we were doing the coast, so from Seawall Mountain to, that campsite in that little unnamed brook, little valley.
Yeah.
And we were like on our hands and knees on the coast, pushing the bags across. Yeah. Well, if you go like 100 meters inland, you get a strip of hardwood and you can coast right through. It literally takes like 30 minutes, 40 minutes from like the base of Seawall Mountain, the waterfall, to the campsite.
Would it take you guys 2 hours?
More than that.
Really?
It was dark. It was like 10 o'clock. It was like August or September we did it. September, I think, second week in September.
I think it was Labor Day weekend, yeah.
Just after that, because we closed Labor Day weekend, I think. Early September. Yeah, yeah. So it was like, you know, bright all day. And it took us forever to get through there. And I remember my ankles were just raw. And I was like, please. And that was the time when I got the camp. And normally... though at the end of the night, we're saying this yesterday, I'd have like a little bit of a weed gummy and then I like lay in the hammock and I'm out cold and I just coast through the whole night. Well, when we got to camp, I decided, I'm like, I'm going to eat this gummy now and then I'll eat all the food. And then by the time I'm done the food, it'll be kicking in. I'll just be passing right out. And so, but my body was so hungry for nutrients, it just devoured it. And then I was on another planet just trying to make Mr. Noodle. And Alec looks at me and he goes, what are you doing? I was trying to make Mr. Noodle for like 20 minutes, it seemed like. I was like trying to figure it out. It was, oh my God. I just remember that. And then, yeah, but and then the next day I think it rained, but yeah, that was a fun trip.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad to have done it. I do it again. I was ready to do it in 3 days. I was so pumped to get out of bullets.
Maybe we'll miss, Chalmers wants to do it in, he wants to see if he thinks it's possible in 24 hours.
I've ran that by Alec, and then Alec ran me into earth. And I was like, it's not worth the risk. Cause like if you're out there and something happens, like you roll an ankle or whatever. And then I was like, ah, good point.
Yeah.
But
he wants to try to do it in like 2 days.
I think you could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all depends on like, and people that we took, I think the last trip of the year this year, there was some people that had done, twice this year, I think. Oh, Ashley Mack. Yeah. She did, with Dave and Skyler, a long weekend in May 2-4 weekend, they did Mikove down the Pleasant Bay. And then when we did the other route up, she said that route they did north to south is a little bit more difficult, which I found interesting. I figured the other way would be more difficult. It's a little more elevation, but yeah, I don't know. But it's a fun route. It's awesome. You get a different view of the whole thing too.
Oh yeah, definitely. You're just staring in the same direction the whole time.
Yeah. And well, plus you're climbing like the mountains before Paulet's Cove, and you get up on the spine that kind of goes back towards Foxback. And if you're looking at a map, it'll go like kind of southeast. And then these spines that come up, and you kind of go around the back into the cove, and you have this view of the whole cove, and you're following these moose trails that are like literally look like they were like, they're similar to the Paulet's Cove trail. They're that well maintained, like moose packed down like highways off these mountains down in. It's pretty neat. And you just follow it. And it's like, you know, this trail would be great if it went down this spine and then did like kind of a switchback and then down this thing. And you follow this moose, and that's what they do. Switchback down right to the river. Like, this is crazy. But you never know that. You don't see that up there until you get to that one. It's kind of like all the, when you're up there, you see tons of moose paths and footprints, but they all congregate to that one point. And then once you get to that point, you just notice it's just all one big highway down. It's pretty neat. A lot of that whole back valley. And then the river system in behind Paulet's Cove is like where they have the, if you look on the seawall map where they, on their website, it has like the identified campsites. The one in behind the cove is like this monster hardwood stand. It's crazy. It's all big hardwoods in that whole valley. Beautiful, beautiful spot. Some cool swimming holes too.
What are some other fun trips you've done?
Like local or just anything? Usually climbing related. Though I've started to kind of diversify and realize that like for me, climbing is just a tool to get outside. And spend time with people outdoors. So, looking into some more running and biking trips, in the future, but things I've done, probably the coolest one was summer of 2021. I went out west to Squamish and the Bugaboos, and the Bugaboos are like an alpine environment for climbing. And that was super cool. I think just because you don't get that here in Nova Scotia. And so, we had tried to go do a climb and then decided we were in overheads and backed out. And even though we didn't do the climb, it was a really cool experience just to be in that environment, and kind of traverse like the glaciers and stuff. And that's where, so when we did Seawall, I had an insane number of snacks. I was just always eating. So, and then that stemmed from going to the Bugaboos because we were there for a week. And if you don't have enough food, you can't just run to the corner store and grab something, right? So I made a spreadsheet where I mapped out like all my calories for the day, but also the weight of things because you have to hike everything in. I think it's a 5K hike with like 800 meters of elevation. So I was really conscious of like what I was bringing in. And then once I had that spreadsheet, I just started using it for everything. So when we did Seawall, it was probably overkill because I could have just winged it. But I was like, okay, I'm going to have 3,800 calories for each day. And then if we weren't doing anything, I was just like, oh, I may as well fuel up and eat some dried mango or some cashews or whatever.
Yeah, I like that. And then you had the calories written on the bag, so I've since done that a little bit.
It's just kind of nice to know like how much you're getting in and like, yeah, if you need 200 or 400 calories, like what you're getting.
I kind of, we've kind of like a call it the Live Life Intense fucking something. I don't know. Not surprise, but it's like the breakfast, whatever it is. Basically, Vector powdered milk, some sort of sugar, and that's it. And you put it in a Ziploc bag, and it's usually like 600 calories.
Great with Rolos in there. Fire some Rolos in there.
Kill your teeth if it freezes. I was putting Captain Crunch. It was like, you know, you put like your, I think I put two portions in there and then just a bunch of scoops of powdered milk. Weighs nothing. And you just add, cold water to
it. You know what though? That tore the air straight out of me.
It's why I have like, I've been eating Vector for like 3 months because I'm trying to go through my reserves from like 2 years ago.
You paddled around Ile Madame.
I did, yeah. So I had a friend who reached out to me about that and we tried it, I think 3 years ago. And where did we leave from? We left from like Janrin's Island and we went clockwise. So we went around the island, then through Lennox Passage. We camped near Caplarond. So we didn't do it in 2 days, kind of split it evenly. And we started off on the next day and we paddled for like a couple hundred meters and then his rudder fell out of the boat. I remember him picking up and looking at it and we were both staring at it. And I have a photo of some sort of bearing or washer just falling between our kayaks to the bottom of the ocean. And we were like, well, that's it. We can't fix that. So then we just, we had a rope and he paddled. I tried to tow him a little bit. Which didn't really work out. And so when we realized it wouldn't work, we just went to shore and his parents came to pick up the kayaks. And then we still wanted to complete it. So we just hiked slash ran back to, where we took off. So this time around we got better kayaks. That's, actually it's, Jessica Boudreau, Caitlin Boudreau's mom. Yeah. So she helped us out and lent us some kayaks and we left earlier. We're kind of like more on top of things and we were going, and we're going to do it in 2 days again. And then, I think we were 3 hours in. I was doing the math about how fast we're going. I was like, we might be able to do this in a day. Like we could, if we just like, don't push it. Just keep going at the same pace. And then I didn't realize how fast the sun set. Cause the day, like that wasn't the daylight savings yet, but like just that time of year where it seems like the sun gets lower and lower by like 15 minutes every day.
Yeah.
So we got around the corner of Caplarond, which is where we had stopped last time, but we had started maybe another like 30 kilometers before. So we just put in like a huge day and I was like, I was ready to go. I was like lining up where the moon was coming over the horizon. I was like, if I keep the moon on my left, then I'll hit shore eventually and I won't just paddle into the Atlantic. And my friend Ben was like, oh, maybe we should camp. I was like, okay, that's fair. Somebody to like bring it back to reality. So we camped on one of the beaches and then got up the next day and just finished up at Jessica's and she came out to paddle us in and
it was, there you go.
Yeah, it was sweet. It was cool.
It's been a trip that I've been wanting to do ever since I talked. Well, I wanted to do it for a while, but I talked to AJ Frazier last 2 years ago. I think it was like their 10-year anniversary when they paddled around Cape Breton Island.
You guys interviewed them, didn't you?
Yeah,
yeah, a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. And then that was a trip I really want. It's on my list, like trip list. That's on my list to spend. Literally, I just want to do like a month and I'm not at the point yet where I can do it, where I can just step away from everything and do it. But it's on my list to do in the next couple years at least. But it's also like the outdoor, man. It's just like, where do I stop with the gear and the stuff and the shit? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I'm buying like all the, I have all the.
I'll tell you something funny. When they paddled around Cape Breton Island, I was working at Governor's Pub. And they finished the paddle in Sydney Harbour at the yacht club and then walked across the road and came into the pub. And thinking about it, I can still smell them. It's a very distinct odor for sure. They look so haggard. Yeah.
And from what I remember, I think it was Ben Freer, right? Mm-hmm. AJ and Ben. Yeah. And I think Ben was like the only guy with experience, or AJ was. I can't remember. One of them was, and one of them was like their first time doing a sea
kayak.
Well,
I think AJ was really experienced
Yeah. So he did work for Angel. That's right. So AJ had
Whitewater
with kayaking, sea kayaking, but Ben was like a canoe guy. And so they set out on this trip and he had no like real Sea Kayak Experience, and like, well, we're doing a month on circumnavigating Cape Breton.
Darcy had sent them with, like, at the time there was no such thing as a GoPro, but Sony made these like action cams.
Mm-hmm.
They look like an old Nokia cell phone. They're really weird looking. And the footage that those things, the footage was pretty cool. Like, and again, too, like back then you couldn't get, there's no such thing as a drone. You know, if you needed an aerial shot, you chartered a helicopter.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, they brought back footage of places that nobody had footage of at that time. Now I would think that, you know, all of those little inlets and stuff are probably shot to death. But at that time, people didn't see parts of the island that they filmed, right?
I'd say that there's still a lot of cool stuff that you'd be able to see that, you know, you wouldn't even know because nobody has that perspective other than maybe a couple fishermen. But, you know, it's like that whole coastal perspective of the island and getting this, and you timed it right in like the certain time of year. Mm-hmm. You could hit up a bunch of the festivals and like, you know,
there's
community festivals, you know, Inverness County, like all the festivals along that whole side. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, you
did the Meat Cove Crab Fest.
Yeah.
Went to that one year. That would have been, that'd be a good one to roll off on a canoe or a kayak.
Yeah. They said the trickiest part of that trip was over the tip, like Money Point. Over that way, they get hit up in some swells and storm and stuff, and I think they ended up in South Harbor Summers. I think they're trying to cross. I think they were trying to cross from Money Point to White Point, and then had to go inland or something like that, from what I remember. But it's been like 2 years since I've.
Yeah, they got a little tow across the bay. They couldn't get across the bay, just the way the current was pulling, and a fisherman came up and we're like, "Hey, boys. You guys want a tow?" We're like, yeah, that'd be great. He like threw them a line and just towed them like the, you know, could have been like 150 meters.
Yeah,
but they were just like struggling with that, right?
Before I forget, I've got an album on my phone, I think. I have to look. It might be on my laptop and a hard drive of like different rocks. So I was sending you pictures over the summer of different places to climb. I've got kind of like a little album of spots when I was getting in places. I would like take a picture of that face. Yeah, one of them, the first one I sent you, I think, was up in Second Forks. So at Second Forks Falls on the north side, you can kind of climb up there and there's just a big rock face. So that's just north, the valley, the brook north from Cape Clear. So you can get down there in like 20 minutes, mm-hmm. half hour from Cape Clear.
Yeah.
Like you park up there and you just hike over the mountain down into the falls. That was one spot. There's a couple others up way up the Margaree River. So you'd basically have to like pack raft in or hike down and then paddle the river and then spend time camping and doing a bunch of stuff. And then where was the other one? There was another one that I found. Oh man, I'm trying to think right now. It might be, where was I scouting recently? Oh, Clyburn River, up where just north of Indian Rising. There's like a big, you can see it on Google Maps. It's like right next to where the falls was. It's just like a big scree slope. And then there's some faces there. So that'd be the backside of Franny Mountain. Summer's in there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
There's some cool spots in there. Yeah. But that's like a 13-kilometer up, hike up, and you camp and then mess around up there. That's sort of, and then Indian Rising itself, apparently, that whole valley south, has a bunch of stuff too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Do you have anything planned? Any
for Cape Breton specifically?
Well, just like any fun stuff coming up you want to do?
Just on the term of climbing, I'd love to like just do some exploring, kind of like what you were saying, and kind of see what's out there and try and get on some faces. But for actual plans, actually, first I wanted to go back to the kayak trip because I don't know. One of you guys said that the hardest thing about their trip was going around the point.
Yeah.
Anyways, the hardest part of my trip was figuring out my bathroom breaks. So like the first time we did, we would paddle into shore, right? And then just like, because they're not our kayaks. So the second time I was like, okay, I got a plan here. So the night before I bought a Gatorade bottle from the store. I didn't drink it. I was like, I'm going to need this tomorrow. So I'll drink it tomorrow. Anyways, if you drink a bottle of Gatorade, you're going to pee at least a bottle of Gatorade. I learned that in the kayak. And then another, just a funny point on that. It coincidentally happened to, we tried it the same weekend that a friend from high school is getting married. And then it just kind of put things in perspective of like, everybody's got their own timeline, because they were getting married, getting their makeup or whatever. Here I was sitting in a kayak trying to pee into a Gatorade bottle in the middle of the harbor. I was like, well, I got a couple more years before I start settling down.
Oh, that is great.
But back to your question, trips. I'm going to Vegas at the end of February to do some climbing.
Cool.
In Red Rock Canyon. So that'll be a fun time, just kind of camping, climbing. And I'm trying to convince some of the other people who are going to get a rental car and drive to the Grand Canyon and run the Grand Canyon. But I'm learning that a lot of climbers, if they're going on a climbing trip, they're going to go climbing. So if anybody wants to run the Grand Canyon at the end of February, let me know.
Yeah, you can get his link in the show notes.
For all our Nevada listeners.
Yeah. You never know, there might be one. There's a few down in, where is it, Virginia? Yeah, shouts out to everybody in Virginia that's listening to this. It's kind of weird, yeah. It's
how
like
did that happen?
I think the link was with a couple years ago. There was like an overlanding crew that came up. I think they're Peachland Overlanding or something like that.
Yeah.
Sorry if I'm messing that name up. Yeah, they came up and were doing a trip all through Nova Scotia, but they're on Cape Breton and they stayed at my place. Bought all kinds of gear, some hoodies and t-shirts and all this sort of shit. And I get tagged all the time by a couple guys down there. And yeah, so I'm assuming that that might be the kind of,
that's where it came from,
the link.
I spent a bit of time in Virginia, bumming around trying to find old guitars. And I met like so many characters down there. It's a good time. I can't tell. I can't tell some of these stories on this podcast. But
you guys need an after dark live life intense.
I don't know what to call that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
X rated. Yeah. It's
live live life in shame.
It's kind of like the live life in memes account.
Yeah.
Gonna get that fired up again.
So, Alex, finally, where can our listeners find your podcast?
So it's definitely on Spotify. It's on Apple Music, and I think it's on Google. Maybe it's on a third one. I don't.
You have a video component as well.
There's a photo component. So part of the idea of where this came from was the year we did the Seawally.
Yeah.
Afterwards, a couple months later, I think I had to stay late at the office just to like meet a deadline or something. I started to realize that, oh, there's kind of aspects in my working professional career that carry over to my hobbies. And that's kind of just like throwing myself at something, grinding to get it done, whether it's staying late in the office to get some work done or making it to campsite after that bushwhacking, pushing through the trees. That got me thinking too about like what other things there are and like planning logistics, whether it's for a trip or for a project, like details and stuff. So then that sparked me to kind of do a self-portrait where there's my working self and then my outdoor self, quotes, mm-hmm. Unquotes, for the lack of a better word. And I merged them together. So there's two photos of me, like pretty drastic difference between the two. And that's where the idea for the photos for the podcast came from. So the idea is to get people in their working environment or outfit and then kind of posing with their outside personalities.
Cool.
So if they're a biker, then have them maybe sit on the bike. And then if they're a nutritionist, that'd be perfect because they could be like feeding them apples or something. I don't know.
Love that.
So yeah, there's a photo component. It's at the 41st hour on Instagram. Mm-hmm. 41st is 41st. And then episodes are on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, and yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for coming down and having a chat with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And if you guys are hurting for guests, then let me know. I'll come on again.
Why not?
Yeah, great.
We got to do one of these, though. Maybe it'll be a post-backyard.
We'll do a
post-Tim Horton run.
Oh, actually.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like little video blog of the Timbit run, a little podcast. We could do that.
I thought of a question earlier when you were talking about running, Lee. If you had to organize an ultra, what would be the unique aspect of it that you would incorporate into it? And you're going to get the same question, Jonathan. So
this may or may not already be in play, but yeah. I don't want to leak too much because then it'll give...
So you have actual plans to like host?
Yep.
Oh, shit.
Pretty much rocking and rolling soon.
So what's your second most unique? Oh, man.
Sorry, what was the question again?
If you were to host an ultra, what would be the unique part of it that would draw people in? So like, for example, the backyard ultra on the farm, yeah. I was like... Nobody would do this, but it'd be funny to run a lap, shear sheep, then like do that and see how many laps.
Well, I mean, there's a cool video that I got sent. It's Bo Miles' video, right? His 24-hour marathon. I don't know if you saw that one. So for people listening, if you want to check it out, go to YouTube, Bo Miles 24-hour marathon, I think. Essentially, he ran his block is like a mile. He ran it every hour for 24 hours and then tried to get as much work done in the other time as possible. So it was like making dinner for his family, making a bench, you know, building a table, fixing a creek and something, like a planting trees. He planted a tree every hour when he got back, like that sort of shit. For me, it would be more or less like, I talked to Dave Green about this as well, cause he wanted to do one and this is months ago, chatting ideas. And my thing would be, I would like to incorporate not so much, ultra by itself, but, multiple different sports in one event. And I kind of like the idea of it being a little bit more like an adventure race with waypoints, right? So there's a little bit of an unknown. Nobody knows where you register for it. You have no clue. You just know that you're meeting at this one location. And when you get there, we release all of the information. You register, you show up, you get the map, and you have like, you know, like 4 hours to plan. Mm-hmm. And you just pick it or a mix of orientation, orienteering. You have to pick certain waypoints to get to it. And it's a mixed bag of like running, maybe paddling, whatever. But if it's running and it's just like complete backcountry, like that's it. You go, everybody has, obviously there's certain things you have to have. You have to have your, inReach and, or a tracking device, that sort of stuff. But that's the element rather than just being a strict, like, you know, a route. But I'd like to do like different. Like, so for instance, one of the ideas was start at my place, Live Life Intense, and either A, up back the mountain, my place, run all the way to Belcote over the top of the Highlands. There's no roads, or there's a couple roads here and there, but you're primarily just backcountry, down into Belcote, across the bridge, up the Belcote Highlands, through the woods, down over the Margaree River, get in the Margaree River, paddle all the way down, or run up and go to Cape Clear and then get down the backside and then come out in big interval, through the Second Forks Falls Trail, and then in big interval you get in a canoe or whatever, and then you paddle down so far, and then you get out, you have to run or bike or do something, right? But I think that's so, like that sort of idea. But if it was a strict ultra, I just like to have some sort of ridiculous crazy thing, right? That's the biggest thing. It's just like something just stupid, like the Barkley Marathon, right? The books, the tearing the page, like shit like that, where it's like, and it's all at once. It's not staged. It's just like, you have 3 days to finish this.
Okay.
Go for it. Cool. Here's all the waypoints you have to hit. You get a stamp or braille, like the E2C here in Halifax has, when I did it 15 years ago, whatever. They had like waypoints, and you get like this waterproof piece of paper, and each waypoint had different brailles. Punch it, and then that, you mean you got there, and you go for 24 hours, and you try to get as many waypoints as possible. I mean, stuff like that. But I would like to do, like, you know, you get up in like the North Aspie, up in that wilderness area, like Seawall Trail sort of shit, and like no roads, no getting out of there. Like safety is definitely a concern, and insurance and stuff. So you might want to keep it not in there, but just something ridiculous. Like, or you do the tip to, or placeholder name tip to tip from Meat Cove to Discoose.
Hiking or biking? Because like the tip to tip is a biking race.
No, I know so like probably 5 years ago when I first started this podcast, we did a Highlands trip.
Like the hike and trail run.
We were, and Alec has a couple of different routes. We talked about this in a podcast like 3 years ago. We didn't know it's a placeholder name. And then at the time, I didn't even know this tip to tip was happening. And then I go, oh, well, we're not using that name. We're going to call it something else. And so the idea behind that was more or less, highest point, like one of the most northern points, and then all the way to the most southern point. And
so you should do Little Ants, not Discoose, because Discoose is on the Lennox Passage. So Little Ants is like the other side of the island, which is more south.
Well, yeah. So that's where we were. Oh, okay. Yeah. That area. And I forget how many kilometers it was, but it was like just shy, like within 100 meters, I think, shy of the same elevation gain as Everest, the route that Alec had mapped out.
Yeah, it's like 40 meters.
So he's like, you just run another hill and then you get it, right? And then the idea, like, so the idea of that, not necessarily for ultra, but for like an idea for a trail, or an, it's a, kind of like an Appalachian Trail type sort of thing, right? So we're going to leave Meat Cove, go down, you finish it, you submit your tracking, your GPS tracking, and then we send like $10 in, we send you a coin and a plaque. It's like, you completed this, you're on the leaderboard, you're number 10024. That's it. And it's like this cool. Big rip. But you could do it as, you know, a month long ultra.
I like it.
Or a week long ultra. But those are some of the things. But anyways, yeah, the ultra stuff, we got something in the works. That's all I'll say on that one. I'll tell you about it maybe.
Off air, maybe, yeah. I'll keep my ears open.
But other than that, that's it. I don't know.
Did you ever, just before we go, do you remember the show Eco Challenge?
No, I don't think so.
It's on a long time ago. So long before Survivor existed, this was Mark Burnett's like big production. They would pick an island somewhere in the world, and they would have a like something like a triathlon across it. Each group, you were a pair. So it might be two Playboy bunnies, two grandmothers, father and son who had been estranged and never met. like everybody had their their group was their own individual personality, you know, and following their journey on completing this. Now, obviously, there's like, you know, maybe a $500,000 prize or something at the end of the thing. So obviously, everybody wants to win it. But unlike things like Survivor and stuff like that, where you are really invested in like who is going to win this competition of wits, you know, I found when I watched Eco Challenge, even when a few years ago I went back and dug up some of the old episodes online and rewatched it, I was really invested. I was much more invested in the story of these people getting each other through this, these waypoints and benchmarks of this, of, you know, getting across Fiji. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, wherever they're at, right? In Colombia, mountain in Colombia, or whatever. I mean, I don't know very much about ultra marathons and stuff, but when you pose that question, I think like I thought that was just such a great format for a show or a run or whatever, is to really just take really unique teams that are not the people who do these things, and you know, but are really motivated to make that an accomplishment in their life and just like follow them on their journey of that, right? So maybe not like send a camera crew with them the whole time, but at each benchmark, like have them, you know, do a little breakdown, send them with a GoPro and just like see what happens, right?
Yeah, I think the idea of teams is really interesting because like who you do your outdoor activities with can really enhance the experiences that you're having.
Or hinder.
Well, I was trying to stay positive. But, yeah. But like, yeah, people are extremely valuable, and to have like-minded people to get outside with is pretty cool.
When we did Across the Highlands, like having Alec and Emily on that trip for me was like, I don't know if I psychologically would have fared out so well on that hike without the two of them.
What support did they provide for you personally? Like, how did they help you get through it?
I mean, Alec was logic for sure, and I think Emily was attitude and like positivity, right? And just like, and the both of them are really inspiring people, I find. One of the really great things that most successful people say is like, surround yourself with really inspiring and successful people, and that will motivate you. That will make you better. That will make you a better person. And I really believe in that. So on that trip specifically, that was like, just a bunch of like macro data on surrounding yourself with really good people. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
no, I'd agree, because we did. When we did the seawall was the first big thing I'd done with Emily. So like the time I've gotten to know her most, and the first time I met Alec. So yeah, they're great people to have out in the backcountry with you for sure.
I just like when something is shit and Alec's just like, fuck it. Let's do it. He's like, whatever. Like, yeah, I like that.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up and, the 41st hour.
Yeah. Go check it out. If you want to be a guest, let me know, because I think everybody has just trying to figure out that work-life balance. So happy to talk to anyone about their work and outdoor hobbies. And yeah, come find me.
Great. Well, thanks for coming now.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next week, everybody. Yeah.